This hour is brought to you by Alpine Credits. Do you own your own home and need a loan? Alpine Credits can help. Visit alpinecredits.ca to learn more.
Hour 2 Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 on the TSN app and online tsn1050.ca. Big hour plan. We've got Sam Hunt, country music star, at 5:30. He's got a new album out. We'll tell you about that. His hopes and plans of playing the amphitheater in June. And he was a football player. He's a guitar guy. He's got a lot going on. And I would assume, and this is simply an assumption, and maybe it's totally ignorant, but if you're in the country game, at some point you were playing Broadway in Nashville, right?
Like you were in. Yes, you are.
You had to show up at some honky tonk and play at 11 a.m. on a Tuesday.
Yeah, he's played at Legends. I guarantee you, he's played at like Legends or Tootsie's or the Stage, any of those like unreal places. But you know, kind of starting out or at least exposing yourself to, that's the wrong word. But you know what I mean?
Yeah, we got you.
You know what
exposing
I mean?
Getting himself out.
Yes, exposing your brand. There
right.
you go.
The brand needs to be exposed.
Yes.
And the music needs to be exposed. And
if you guys knew what I was talking about.
Hey, dude, I'm still getting hammered for keeping active. You're going to get hit at least for a follow-up on that comment.
Yes, for sure.
But I wonder how ruthless those bars and honky-tonks are in Nashville, like about you're playing us, you're not playing across the street, you're not playing down the road, because there's like 20 bars that are on top of each other basically, and they all want whoever they can get, and I'm sure they got headliners on a Friday night, Saturday night, they're looking for the big guys, and I would be almost surprised if they didn't try and lock down certain artists and say, if you're playing
those
here.
Those artists are going to be like, I'm trying to make it big time. I'm not going to lock myself into your honky-tonk.
Well, I wonder if they are regulars for that. I mean, I wonder if Legends has like a, you know, I do this 6 o'clock, you know, show every Tuesdays and Thursdays. Like, you wonder if that, you know, is that what you're talking about, Brian?
Like, well, what I'm saying regular? Is, I'm saying, like, yeah, if you're a superstar, that's a different story, because you still do see that and hear that from time to time. Like, I don't know anymore, but like Loretta Lynn would show up somewhere like 20 years ago and just start playing. And it's like, okay, you're not going to turn her down or say, well, you can't go across the street. She'll do whatever she wants. Sam Hunt, if he shows up in Nashville and goes, I'm playing Tootsie's tonight and Legends tomorrow, they're just happy to have you. But if you're just kind of getting a name for yourself and just getting going, you're still, I would think, at the mercy of the bar owners and the club owners. Like, you got to get out there and be heard. You got to play. You got to get paid. You got to build up a listenership. Yeah. And if they're like, listen, man, if you want my stage, which is, you know, as big as it gets at Legends or Tootsie's, like the two kind of names that everyone knows worldwide, I'm not letting you go across the street. And if you do go across the street, that's fine, but you're not coming back here. You know, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, and I don't know if those type of politics would happen, but I'd be almost surprised if they didn't.
Politics happen everywhere. You
they
know
do.
That.
There's money on the line. Absolutely. Yeah. So Sam's coming up in about 25 minutes. Kyle Dubas will join us here in a moment. And I wonder if Nashville would be high on Kyle's list of
He's buddies with Max from the Arkells, so I don't know. Maybe they travel in different circles.
Well, yeah. I mean, I'm sure in Hamilton, he loves partying in Hamilton, but let's bring on the GM of the Maple Leafs right now. Here is Kyle Dubas. Kyle, do you have a favorite city to visit on the NHL circuit?
Ooh, my favorite city. Denver is up there for sure. Vancouver. Not a big Florida or California guy. I think Denver and Vancouver would probably be my two favorite.
The mountains or what? Like Denver? I've never heard someone say Denver.
Everyone hiking or what?
Yeah, I like the city. I just like the city and the climate and the surroundings. I think it's I enjoy it. So
I'm not a
very exciting person, guys. I don't know what to tell you.
I know something about the Denver airport. I'm not sure if you've heard that. If there's there's rumblings of the Illuminati. Have you ever heard that, those that situation? Like, there's all sorts of symbols along there. When I played there for a couple, I played a couple months there in Denver 100 years ago in the minors, but apparently there's some sort of, like, I don't know, conspiracy theories of, about that airport and why it was built all the way out there, and there's tunnels and stuff like that. Have you ever heard anything like that?
I'm not at liberty to say, Jamie.
Wow.
Cannot confirm or deny.
I've never heard that, though.
Okay. Yeah, I haven't heard that either. What are you watching on YouTube, Newman?
No, I'm telling you. I'm telling you. I've heard that. Yeah.
That is a rabbit hole. Well, we want to thank you. You've offered us up some content here. You got a signing this morning. And Alexander Baranov from the KHL, who's a guy that it's our understanding you've been pursuing or talking to for a while, and other teams were in pursuit of his services. You locked him in today officially, and take us through why this player was on your radar and why you're so happy to have him locked down.
Yeah, he's someone that one of the key members of our staff, Jim Pagliafito, he runs sort of the entire department when it comes to free agents and other teams' prospects, and a large part of his time is spent on European free agents. And so we've been talking about Alex and watching him and kind of breaking down his game for a couple of years. And I think we think he would fit with what we want to do, not only with his talent level, his ability to make plays, but he's also he's not tall, but he's very strong and competitive, and he's been a part of teams, St. Petersburg, that have won two championships and an Olympic gold medal and multiple world championships for Russia. So he's shown that, you know, he doesn't just have to produce. He certainly can and produce at a high level, but he's also able to chip in a number of different ways. And so it's been a process over the last couple of seasons, just in getting to know him. Jim has really driven that process for us in terms of building a trust and building a relationship with Alex and his wife. And so when it came down to the actual decision, Jim Palafito's work was massive, and us being the place that he elected to sign and begin his North American career.
Did you have to adjust any part of your scouting staff to go out and find the diamonds in the rough, ever since your structure right now was the big guys are, you know, up heavily paid, making tons of money, and you got to find those guys for the next 3 or 4 years to fill in roster spots? Did you have to make any adjustments to find guys to go out there and scout rinks and scout places to find these people?
It's a yes and no, Jeff. Yes, we certainly have put a greater emphasis on the fact that because of the way that we've built our team, and if we want to really have the success that we desire, which is to be a contending team year in and year out, it's once we made the commitment to our forwards at the top of our lineup in terms of attributing a lot of our salary cap space there, it put the pressure right onto me and onto our player personnel department to find players that could come in from, you know, largely from Europe or from other organizations that maybe they haven't gotten a chance in another organization, or they're ready to move over from Europe. So your Mikheyevs and players like that can come in and get rolling and play right away and help our team right away while on an entry-level contract. So we really have put a lot of focus on that, and we knew we were going to have to do that when we made the commitment to the big forwards. And in addition to that, it's also putting a lot of pressure on our development staff, which I think can handle it just in terms of taking our drafted players and developing them as efficiently as possible so they can convert from being prospects and minor pro players to NHL players. But when it comes to the attribution of our scouting resources, Jim Pagliafito has been out at this now for 5 years in this role. This is the end of his fifth season with the Leafs, and he does a really good job not only identifying, you know, the players that we want to go after, but doing so a number of years out, so that we can begin building a relationship and a trust with them. So we have put a greater focus on it, but we haven't really increased the number of people who are out watching, just because we've got a lot of faith in the way that Jim operates.
Not Eddie Olchuk? You didn't rely on him for any of that information?
We need Eddie.
That was
back
one of the great moments of the year.
Eddie Olchuk.
I was so confident that the Seattle just brought in Eddie O. Yeah. What a move.
Gets him out of the booth, right into the front office. What a move. with Kyle Dubas, the GM of the Maple Leafs. And it's difficult to have these conversations about the season because the season is incomplete at this point and to assess what you've seen and what you've learned. But I think there's enough sample size. I mean, you guys played 70 games. When it comes to your cap structure, you know, once you locked in the big four up front and committed to that money, we were wondering how this experiment was going to play out. And again, without knowing about the playoffs and the playoff success that potentially could have been there, which may affect the way every, you know, the general public feels about things, what have you learned about your cap structure, specifically when it comes to committing as much as you did to those four guys up front? And are you still as bullish on that idea today as you would have been on September 15th?
I think injuries notwithstanding, I think those guys all had, they all produced at a very high level. I think, in particular, I think throughout the year, William and Austin have been healthy. I mean, William missed two games with the flu in early February, but you know the two guys that have been healthy, I think, made major steps. And you know, John and Mitch both produced at a high level. They both unfortunately also missed time due to injury, and both kind of freak injuries. Mitch steps on a guy's stick and against Philadelphia in November, and John, you know, a slap shot to the hand in Washington in October. So, you know, those types of things are going to happen in a season, but I think, you know, all of them have produced at a high level. I think that I've got a lot of belief in all four of those players. And I think it's the same principle, I think, Brian, that we had at the beginning of the year, which is it's on me to deliver with the rest and to find a way to build the remainder of the roster that can have our group move ahead. And I know that looking at the inconsistency, to put it probably favorably, that we went through during the year, it's tough to, I could understand why people would have their doubts, but I thought we showed a lot of very good things, especially like the way that we had a number of nights where you know, we frankly embarrassed ourselves. And the one thing I did like, I hated that we were in that position. I think our coaches and players would reiterate that and agree. But the thing that I liked is that every time we were in a spot like that, we didn't, even with the noise kind of growing and the doubts increasing about it, we would always find a way to push back. The last game that we played is a good example of that. And if you go back the weeks before, whether it was in Tampa or coming back home against Pittsburgh, anytime we were in a spot with our back against the wall, especially against a high quality opponent, we would find a way to battle back and play some of our best hockey. And I mean, we're realistic and know that we need to do that far more often. My thinking before the season pause was that, you know, this having to go through these ups and downs were going to serve us very well in the future. And I still fully believe that. And I think the pause in the season will give us a chance to reflect and continue to stay at work and building and developing where we want to go with our program.
With Kyle Dubas, we had Sheldon Keefe on the lunch earlier and was talking about what he's doing daily and how he's trying to stay productive and watching tape and keeping in contact with his staff and I'm sure with yourself in the front office and to an extent with the players. Like he said, we're keeping in contact with the players, but we don't want to overwhelm the players. They deserve their space. Asked him, you know, is this a time where, besides putting an emphasis on physically staying in shape, which clearly would be of importance for pro athletes, is it an opportunity for your players to grow in terms of scouting around the league, in terms of building upon the system that Sheldon is trying to implement, where he didn't have that chance to have a training camp because he wasn't here in training camp? What are your expectations when it comes to your players? If you're back in camp, a mini camp, or on the ice in 3 months, would you hope they've been watching tape? Would you expect they've watched tape? Can they expect to show up on day one and know, okay, Sheldon wants us to do this differently or that differently? What are the expectations that have been placed on the players from that capacity?
Yeah, I don't want to get into the too much of the finer details because I think it's a private thing for our team and the way that we're operating at this time. But I do think that Sheldon and his staff, in concert with the player development staff here, have done a great job of engaging the players in a partnership type format through this time, with regards to where they think their game is at, where we think it's at, and how we're going to build them onto the next step. And so I think that the way that Sheldon and the staff have done that has certainly been interesting for me to watch, because it's very different. You never have this type of situation ever. You may at some points in the summer, but a large part of that is the player focusing on his off-season training and so on and so forth. Now they don't really have access to those types of facilities, so their brain is still sort of attuned and getting ready for a return to play at some point. So I think that Sheldon and the staff have done a great job on that end of it, just in terms of keeping the players engaged while also not overwhelming them and showing that, you know, we obviously we value what their thoughts are, and we want to take what they think about their game and sort of sharpen any contrast that we see with regards to disagreement with where they think they're at and where we think they're at, and be able to build a strong case to arm them with information and video to move ahead. And so that for me has been a really encouraging part of this. And as it pertains to Sheldon, you know, he's never had a training camp to really build with the way that he wants the team to play. He had one morning skate and then coached his first game in Arizona. So for me, and I think for our organization, it's exciting to know that whenever we get back and rolling, it's going to present Sheldon the chance to really, I think, institute the foundation that we're going to want here, and that he's, you know, so capable of providing, that can lead us deep into the future.
With Kyle Dubas, one question that continues to get directed towards us from a lot of fans is the implications that this stoppage in play and potentially cancellation of the season. I know we're not there yet, and Gary Bettman has not given any announcement on that. But the effect it'll have on the draft, where you have a draft pick that is protected in the Marlowe deal. If you guys are in the top 10, you keep it this year. If you're not in the top 10, it belongs to Carolina this year. Any update on that? Do you know where that might be going, or anything you can tell us?
No, I don't. From my understanding of it, I think the league has done a great job of communicating the fact that, you know, they're very optimistic that at some point we'll be able to finish the season. And I think they've obviously stressed the safety and importance of everybody doing their part right now to stay at home and protect our communities and protect the people on the front lines that are out there battling to slow and stop the spread of this virus. But the one thing that I think, I don't know what will happen precisely, but I think it's tough to imagine, because there's so many picks that are tied up with conditions on playoff qualification and playoff advancement. I think we have two of our picks this year that are conditioned on those. The Marlowe Carolina trade from last year, which, as you said, is top 10 protected, but then also the Campbell Clifford deal. It's one of the conditions is if we make the playoffs and Campbell wins a certain number of games, it goes from a third to a second. So it would be, I think there's a number of trades that are like that are contingent on games played and playoff advancement, that it could be tough to really create a solution for the draft until the season was completed one way or another.
Kyle, apparently you like to hand out books to people. How do you go about picking the book or picking the guy or figuring out what book matches what personality? How do you go about that?
Usually I just, I try to spend as much time as I can reading, because I find that it's a great way for me to learn and sort of reflect on different experiences that I've had where I don't think I've done as well as I could have on different things or let people or organizations down. And reading is a great way to try to educate on different things. And if I'm reading a book and there's whether it's the full book or a section of a book that I think applies to one of our players or one of our staff that I think can help them, I try to pass those along to them. And if they read them and they learn something from it, or they take something from it, then that's great. So that's sort of how it usually plays out. There's some that I think apply to the whole group and where we're at, and we'll mostly give those out at the beginning of the year or at Christmas time or at the end of the season. But there's a lot of times during the year if I'm reading and I think there's something that applies to one of our players or staff in particular and what they're going through or what they've gone through in their life or career to date, I'll usually quickly get to the book and explain why.
Do you have a book for the three of us that we could read? not me, the three of us. There's a reason I included the three of us.
A book that Brian and Jamie can read to you, is that what you're asking?
That is not what I'm asking. I said the three of us.
Oh, man.
About that and you get back to us.
Yeah, we could use the enlightenment, believe me. We need some help here. So if you have any way of helping us, we'll wait. We'll wait for your advice, Kyle.
No worries. I'll think about it when I hang up, and then I will I'll send you over exactly what my thoughts are.
All right. We look forward to it. Stay safe, stay healthy, and we'll do this again soon. Yeah, and stay
perfect.
Active. That's our new catchphrase. Stay active, Kyle. Thank you for this.
Thanks, guys. Have a great night.
There's Kyle Dubas. Yeah, he's got an idea, but he didn't want to say it on the air. I'll bet you he's got a book in mind.
Well, the Curious George book.
Sure. I love how I'm just a laughing stock of it. He's just like, oh, yeah, they read you a book.
The coloring book was on a tee for him.
Yeah, right away he was going to be like, Curious George goes on the bus or something. Yeah. Right away, that's what was coming. But he was very diplomatic about it.
He was, and we'll hold him to that. Listen, we're looking for knowledge. We're looking for enlightenment. Any way
there
he
was,
can help
there
us,
was
we'll
some thinking
it.
Behind that. There was the three of us included. There was not just me.
I figured. Yeah.
Yes,
so if he gets back to us, and we expect that he will, we'll let everyone know.
We should have a poll. What kind of books should each one of us get?
No, it's got to be the three of us, because he's just going to rip me and have some stupid book from Oprah to lose weight or some crap
no,
like that.
No, it's not.
Yeah,
it's not going to be a weight loss book.
I hadn't thought of that. Yeah, the
Oprah weight loss.
That was available to him, too. If he threw that fastball down the plate.
Then we hang up on him.
Yeah, that's unacceptable. We can't accept that type of
behavior.
He
wouldn't have done that. No.
All right, so thanks again to Kyle. And Ray, we move. So Ray Ferraro will join us in the 6 p.m. hour. Want to get back into this Tom Brady article in the Players Tribune. People trying to read between the lines on what it meant with his relationship to Belichick, the Patriots, why he's decided to do this. Is he opening up? Is he going to become a new person? He's going on with Howard Stern tomorrow, something he never did in 20 years in New England. So we'll talk about that later in the hour. And country star Sam Hunt, he's got a new album out. He's supposed to play at the amphitheater this summer. We'll get into that and more with Sam next.
You've got a cold heart and cold heart truth. I got a bottle of whiskey, but I got...
All right, Sam Hunt, expected to call in momentarily. He's got a new album out, Southside. You're listening to Hard to Forget right now, a new track that is skyrocketing up the charts.
Hazy, instead of having Aaron directly on to ask the question, which I think you should do, you let her write one down on a paper for you.
I will. I've already. She's excited. She's looking forward to it. She's listening live upstairs. She's got our Google Home rocking. The kids are very excited. Mm-hmm. And I guess we're just hoping Sam actually calls in. There's always a chance he's got bigger and better things to do.
Yeah, and we have our book assignment.
Yeah, this is big. I credit Kyle. So Kyle Dubas joined us, and that was a great call by you, because he is known to do this. He will send books to people. He'll gift books to different people in his organization, players, coaches, management, scouting, whatever. And he reads a lot. He's into the book game. And if he reads something that he thinks applies to a player, coach, or whatever, he'll get that book for them.
What do you think the percentage is that he has read the book that he recommended us?
Oh, I'm sure he's read it.
I think it's high for this one because he's putting himself out there. He's going public, right? The book, he posted this on Twitter, Kyle Dubas.
You talk about bar game, though. Like, if you're single and you're known as, like, book guy, you can just hand over a book to somebody, like, just the most ridiculous, complicated, sophisticated book, and say, I want you to read this. Like, if you get that going in bar play,
I don't know how that applies to
legend.
Bar play, though. Bar play, no one's sitting there at midnight asking about books, you know? Like,
you're telling me if you're a single dude and you started dating someone and you're like, I really want you to read this book?
Oh, I think that would be powerful if she decides to read it and it's something that's poetic or whatever. But, like, the book that he sent to us is Charlene Nemeth, wrote this book, is the author of the book.
One of my favorites.
Titled In Defense of Troublemakers, The Power of Dissent in Life and Business.
I just downloaded it on iBooks.
I think we got to do a book report on the show.
Get the hell out of here.
I say we all get it. We all read it.
I almost just swore. Like, are you kidding me?
I say we do it. Don't you think so, Noodles?
Yeah, I mean, why not?
How about this? This is all I'll agree to. We pick a day of the week. We have to read one chapter. Let's say Friday. We got to have one chapter of this book read by Friday. That's all I'm doing. I'm not like...
You're going to commit to one chapter.
You know what this
one
is?
One chapter a this week. You got to have it read, and we go over it.
This is subscription to The Athletic. you read the opening paragraph, whatever they allow him to, and then that's it. So this is, I don't know how long the book is. I don't know much about it. I'm just
one chapter a week, and we talk about it. The book report.
Now, I will judge a book by its cover. This feels like a book that's like 700 or 800 pages long.
Yeah, it's
and
War
the
and
print
Peace.
Is small. It's like 8 font. You know
yeah,
what I mean?
Like if you don't have a college degree, which only none of us have.
Well, this Hazy B, you don't have. You got the university.
He had a casino in college. There's no way you have a degree.
I've got
right?
papers. I've got
no,
papers.
You don't. Yeah. Come on, man.
Yeah. Well, I'm not far off from you guys. Like I've
yeah,
read
which
more
is
books
nothing.
Than you have. But I have to admit, I have not heard of this author, and In Defense of Troublemakers, The Power of Dissent in Life and Business is not a book that was on my radar. It's not a book that's in my fake library. This is the kind of book, though, that I'm talking about. Like Ray or Dregs or Naylor, they would have this book in the background, and they haven't read that book.
No.
They haven't read that book. And now everyone's at home. You know, Rod Smith is set up and...
Dude, it's like a designer. They get fake books and they just decorate with it, man. That's it.
Yeah, it's exactly. Because no one cares. If you're watching, like, it's impressive if you have a book behind you. And I guess you just assume that person's read that book.
What you got to do is
but
put
I don't
a
think
guitar
they've read any of those
behind
books.
You instead of the book.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you have a guitar or some
I
some
say
notes.
Football. I say football. I think a football up against... Like, football guy up against guitar guy... That's going to break the ice pretty easily, both of them. But I got to think football guy goes first. We have country superstar on the line. He's supposed to be in Toronto later this summer. We're looking forward to that, playing down at the amphitheater. He's got a new album out, Southside, skyrocketing up the charts. It's available now. He's already got number one hits. His last album was a monster up here in Canada. And he joins us now for the first time. Here is Sam Hunt. What's up, Sam?
What's up, guys? How's it going?
We're doing pretty well, man. Thanks. We've been talking about your history. Like, obviously, you're big in the country game, but you were a big football guy growing up. So if you had to pick one today, are you a football guy first or a musician first? What's your stance on that?
Well, I think at the core, I would say I'm a football guy first. And I picked up music and kind of faked it till I made it kind of thing in music.
Yeah, like that must have worked for – obviously, it worked for you. But, like, football and guitar guy, that's pretty good.
Well, football came more naturally to me, I think, growing up. I think that's why I gravitated towards athletics. But I always was a big music fan. I was always, always really loved music. I even more so than my peers, I felt like. So I picked up a guitar, started to learn to play, and felt like I might have a knack for it maybe. And just, I think I just worked really hard at it. I moving to Nashville, everybody's so good. They've been playing their whole lives. I had to kind of catch up, so I just hunkered down. And I wouldn't say I caught up, but I got to a point where I could write songs and play on guitar and just do the things I needed to do to make records and do what I'm doing now.
We were talking about Nashville earlier. Did you, when you started out and got to Nashville, did you play all the Tootsies and the normal clubs along the strip before you made it big?
No, that's kind of the traditional approach, but I moved up to Nashville and discovered this songwriting scene. There were these a lot of guys behind the scenes. I thought growing up that all the guys singing on the radio wrote all their own songs, but got to town and realized that there's this whole community behind the scenes writing these songs. So I got plugged in with some of those guys, and that was really my passion early on, was writing more than getting in front of people and trying to sing. So I just looked up and got some songs recorded and got the attention of a record label and got the opportunity to make a record and then put the record out. And I really didn't have a chance to look back after that. I just started touring and That was, you know, 5 to 6 years ago. So that's, I guess, not the traditional approach. Most people play in bands, they tour and tour and tour, and then they get a shot that way. But I got the opportunity to do what I'm doing now through the songwriting world.
So just to follow up on that, you meet some of these songwriters, and something clicks and it works out. You want to sing the song. How do you compensate the people that write it? How does that work out?
Yeah, well, so I write all my stuff now. You know, I write the records, but I have collaborators that I write with. So I met a group of guys, and those were the guys I was getting cuts with. By cuts, I mean like getting songs recorded by other artists. And my collaborators, we're all basically, as far as the songwriting goes, equal share partners on the songs. So in Nashville, they call it a word for a third. So, you know, when you're in a room with three people, no matter who can, you know, you don't try to weigh who contributes, you know, what, you just split it up, you know, 33% each. And then, of course, it was four people to be 25% each, but, or 250. But yeah, so everybody gets equal share on the publishing when you get together to collaborate on the songwriting.
The new album is out. It's called Southside. You can find it everywhere. He's got number one hit, Kinfolk, and a bunch of hits that are already starting to really skyrocket up here in Canada in particular. We're chatting with Canadian or country superstar Sam Hunt.
Sam, what's your go-to routine? Let's say you end up going out in Nashville just to have some fun with some friends, and people recognize you and start to ask, maybe, would you go up on stage and play? Are you that type of guy? You just grab a guitar and you can do it? Or you kind of allow the whoever's playing that night to do their thing? Like, are you shy? Not shy to get up there, but I know some guys who are in the music game that don't want to get up there and play. Are you a guy that will?
Yeah, I would say, now that I've been around some natural entertainers, you know, there's certain guys that just are the center of the room, and they come, when they're in any environment, like Luke Bryan's that guy, like that way. He's such an entertainer. I was out on the road with him, and he's just somebody who, you know, if there was a guitar in the room, you could hand it to him and he'd play. He could play for an hour. I'm kind of sort of the opposite. I just want to sit back and kind of blend in and enjoy the show. So if it's not my show, I typically will just be a fan and just kind of try to blend into the crowd and enjoy the show.
We were talking about this earlier. My wife is like a big country fan. She's a super fan of yours. And, you know, she loves country first and foremost. But, yeah, she's into pop music and stuff. And Body Like a Back Road is obviously a monster country hit. But that was like a pop hit. That was a big, big song on, like, pop music and pop music stations throughout North America. And I've always been kind of curious about how the country game works, because we experienced it a little bit indirectly with Shania Twain up here in Canada, because Shania was country, but she was pop too. She was a monster. My understanding was kind of the old school country crowd in Nashville didn't love that necessarily. Is that still the case today? If you kind of sneak into the pop world, how do people react to that?
Well, there are the purists, the more traditional fans who are they're very particular about, you know, the instrumentation you use and, you know, all the things that they consider country and not country. It's funny, like, I've noticed from playing in Canada and touring in Canada, you guys aren't as particular about that. But when you get in the States, and especially when you get down where I'm from in the South, you know, everybody has their own style of country, you know, and country music is a conservative genre, and the conservative people listen to it. So in a lot of ways, you know, they don't want you messing with tradition too much. So there are people who, you know, who don't want the country music to change too much. But then you got the more progressive crowd who likes a little influence from outside the genre. So I try to, and I would fall into that category as a fan. So I naturally, as an artist, I like to pull from other genres too. But for the most part, you know, there's a lot of room nowadays in country music for artists who are more traditional, and then artists who, you know, may have a sound that may cross over a little more.
Sam, what's one of your favorite cities to play on the road? Let's say you go on a North American tour. What's the, I guess you circle on the calendar, or you circle on the stop? Which is one of your favorite cities to play?
Yeah, I like the Northwest of the U.S. I always love coming up to Canada. I mean, Toronto's has always been a fun city to play. Just the Canadian people, it's like, they remind me of Southerners a little bit, just the hospitality and the good reception, the warm reception we get up there. But Denver and up Washington State, Seattle area, just because I grew up in the South and I'd never really traveled outside of the you know, Alabama, Georgia, Tennessee, South Carolina, Florida group of states. So I've enjoyed getting to travel and see some places that I wouldn't have seen otherwise. But, yeah, I'd say the Northwest, and then as long as it's not too cold, you know, summertime, I love getting up to Canada.
With country superstar Sam Hunt, his new album's out, Southside. You're now working and you're operating in the iTunes era, but you're still knocking out albums. And I'm curious as to the mentality when you complete the album. Are you thinking, man, I hope everyone loves every track, or are you hoping for one monster, like one monster song that's just going to skyrocket up the charts that everyone's going to hear, everyone's going to know? Like, what's the mentality in the iTunes, I can download one song, I don't have to download the whole album era that we're dealing with?
Yeah, well, we have a pretty, I've noticed from just from touring and getting to know our fan base a little bit, we have a pretty diverse fan base. So it seems like everybody has a different song that draws them in. So I, with an album, I kind of like to have a little bit of something for everybody, I guess you could say. But you do like to have those one or two songs that you can kind of hang the rest of the album on that you hope maybe will relate to the broadest audience, and then the broadest audience. And then from there, you can be more, unique outside of that and try to, you know, maybe appeal to different people with different songs. But yeah, you kind of feel like you need one or two that you can kind of build the album around.
So before we get you out of here, as you said, you're a big football guy, and now that you're living in Nashville, I don't know if you're a Titans fan or not, but being in Nashville, when Brady was available, and there were a lot of people linking Tom Brady to the Titans, what was the buzz like in Nashville and throughout the state?
Yeah, it was real, man. I was hoping Brady would come down to Nashville, you know, maybe even get Gronkowski to come back and join the Titans. I know he's spent some time in Nashville too, but and then of course Chris Henry. I mean, Derrick Henry. We would have had a heck of a squad. It was looking like it could be a possibility for a minute there, but of course Tannehill is a great player, and they obviously were going to go with him. I think that was a good choice too.
Yeah, he broke out last year. There's no doubt about that. The website, samhunt.com. Again, his new album is out, Southside. We're hoping to get you up here at some point in the summer. I know, you know, the world's on pause right now, but I know a lot of people in Toronto and throughout the country, huge fans, and we wish you nothing but success down the road, and really appreciate you finding some time for us this afternoon.
Appreciate it, man. I know Toronto was one of the best opening week of ticket sales. It was one of our best spots, so we definitely are looking forward to getting up there as soon as we can.
We look forward to it. Good luck, man. Thank you, Sam.
Thanks, guys.
There he is, Sam Hunt, country superstar, joining us here on Overdrive. That was cool.
Yeah, it was great. He's real. Like, he's you could tell.
He's
like
a southern boy.
Oh, yeah, he's from Georgia. Is.
Like, that's the thing. If we, you know, you get a little bit more comfortable with him, I guarantee you, like, that being a big former football player and then in some country bars, like, he's had a few dust-ups, I guarantee you. Like, you look at his images and that, like, he's not a small guy. He looks like he's put together, too. So, you know, when he was talking about people being particular about their country music, you know, he's had a few chirp fests with people. And,
oh, yeah, man. Like, that country music more so than any other music, like, they are so beholden to the past, and like I've kind of gotten into rabbit holes on YouTube and stuff, seeing interviews of like Hank Williams Jr. talking about his transition going from playing his dad's stuff, like Hank Williams old school country, to playing like All My Rowdy Friends Are Coming Over Tonight, and people looking at him like he's crazy, like,
yeah,
you know, how dare you do that, that's not how we operate down here. But anyway, I mean, that was cool. Sam
Hunt. It was great. Was Aaron fired up or what?
Yeah, I'll go get the information for you. I mean, again, like I said, Google Home. It's rocking upstairs. I've been relegated to the basement. I've been down here for about 2 weeks.
Did you let her have a question?
I think the question was the pop question. How it transformed over to the pop, like Shania Twain.
That's right. And Shania is a perfect example because she is.
Well,
she,
a modern example is Taylor Swift.
Even better. That would have been even more modern. And that's in it. Like, Aaron loves Taylor Swift, loves Shania. But Shania got like huge blowback. Like, when she rolled into Nashville, it was like, who's this? And that's not how we roll.
Well, and there's country.
She laughed like, all the way to the bank.
You're right. Florida-Georgia Line is a prime example. Like they're supposed to be a country band, but they've got tattoos and they're kind of like outlier guys. You know what I mean? Like they're gritty and you know they're a massive band. But that's a great get, Sam Hunt. He's fantastic. And our buddy, I think our buddy Tony set that up.
Yeah, he did. Tony.
Friend of the show.
Friend of the show.
Who's
and the
Tony?
Grappler. Tony Sambor. He's a legend. Yeah. Just accept the. You need to start reading more, man.
Exactly. No, don't worry. We got a book report coming up.
Yeah, it is. It's happening.
Yeah,
it's
in defense happening. Of troublemakers, courtesy of Kyle Dubas. Thanks again to Sam for joining us. You can find everything podcasted online, tsn1050.ca, and subscribe and check us out on iTunes. We got Ray Ferraro coming up in the next hour. We've got four battles ongoing online on the Overdrive Madness bracket. And we'll get into Tom Brady's, I guess, piece in the Players Tribune and how many people are reading between the lines in terms of what he's saying about his past and what he expects to do in his future down in Tampa. We'll get into that next. All right, Ray Ferraro, Bob McKenzie still to come. We've got four audio battles in the Overdrive Madness bracket. We'll get to that as well. We talked about the ESPN report about MLB looking into setting up shop in Arizona, having all the players, managers, coaches, personnel there, and basically self-isolating, getting tested, and then trying to play the MLB season. We haven't gotten into the UFC stuff, which is just so much crazier when you think about it. Like Dana White finding a private island somewhere.
Where is this?
That's a baller move. I'm telling you, that's a baller move.
It is. I mean, it's like a tax evasion scheme, and they're going to set up an octagon, and guys are going to show up and fight. And what Dana White, I think, understands and knows is fighters, they have a limited shelf life. They don't make a lot of money, so they're going to have to fight. And in baseball, I'm intrigued on how this is going to play out because I think that logic applies to 70% of the union. Like, I got to play. I got to make the paychecks. You know, I don't have $100 million in the bank. Mike Trout, you can call him up and say we're playing in 2025. He'll be fine. But I don't know about the guys who aren't making that much money.
Hayes, do you not think, or what are your thoughts on, like, what is the status of Conor McGregor? When this starts, you know, you talk about having a huge sports moment, whatever sport that would be coming out of this, how emotional it will be after this is over. Do you not think, like, when this, our lives get back to normal, some kind of Conor McGregor event to kind of just say, all right, people, let's get back at it and have this guy go at it with somebody and have a monster event?
I wouldn't be surprised.
I think it would be great.
Yeah.
But
well,
you know.
And now that like Habib was supposed to fight Ferguson and that's out, maybe you come back and it's Conor versus Habib. Like that's what people want to see. I know fight fans want to see something different, but the non-diehards are dying for McGregor versus Habib. Like that's what I want to see. That's what I would pay a lot of money to see. But the dynamics of asking players to show up, maybe when they don't feel 100% committed to it or confident or safe, but they're desperate. You know, there's an ethical element in play there. And the same thing's going to happen with baseball and hockey and basketball, right? Like they're asking Crosby to take a year off. He can survive. That doesn't mean he wants to take a year off, but Sid's got money. He'll be okay. Asking the guy who's making $750 a year to take time off, that's different. Right?
Well, it's like those lockout situations. Ray's talked about it before. How many times or how many players did it end their career? Like a lockout, older guy. Like we're talking about it right now. Think of the older guys who won't play again. Because, you know, I mean.
We just talked to one today, Patrick Marleau. He says he wants to play. That doesn't mean he's going to.
Yeah, you're right.
Absolutely.
Like, there's no guarantee. Like, you know, and the guys who were hanging on that may have made a little bit of hay in the playoffs or something like that, earned themselves a contract. If they don't get that opportunity, they're flushed out of the league. And it's not a 35-year-old guys. It could be a guy who's 29 turning 30 that you're caught in that middle level and a team goes, "You know what? We're going to start back up here and we've got some fresh legs. We got a young guy that's going to push through and he's on an entry level deal and we don't have to do this and that." And you know, to me that's it if you go back and look at the guys who never played again after those lockouts and stuff, it's the numbers are staggering. very staggering.
Yep, that's 100% true. And hopefully we don't face that, and I don't think we will. I mean, Kyle Dubas did say that to us this hour, and we've heard it, but we just heard it from a GM, that the NHL feels confident that they can get this season in. You know, it's not a guarantee, but they're confident that testing is going to be enhanced significantly, that maybe this virus is starting to curve and move in a better direction. But we won't know for at least a month some of the framework, let alone all the details. Ray Ferraro in the next hour. We'll get more of an update on that with Bob McKenzie. We will get into this Brady piece. I continue to plug it. We'll touch on it to kick off the 6 p.m. hour. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050, online tsn1050.ca.
This hour has been brought to you by Alpine Credits. Do you own your home and need a loan? Alpine Credits can help. Visit alpinecredits.ca to learn more.